Well, we all use electricity every day, but if you're like me, you don't always think about where it's coming from and what would happen if it suddenly went away. On the show today, we'll tell you more about our electric grid and growing renewable energy technology. I'm Larry Mueller, by the way. Great to have you along on the Ideas Network. In the studio today with us by phone, Tom Johns. He's the Granger Professor of Electrical and Computer Engineering, actively involved in renewable energy research in the areas of wind power generators and also electric microgrids for sustainable buildings. Tom Johns, welcome.
Thank you very much, Larry. It's a pleasure to be here.
Yeah, great to have you with us. Also, a first-time guest, Aaron Olson, a PhD from the University of Wisconsin-Madison's Fusion Technology Institute, as a NASA Space Technology Research Fellow, and he co-founded Novomoto to help solve the extreme lack of electricity in his home country of the Congo. Aaron Olson, welcome.
Hi, thank you. Great to be with you today.
Yeah, it's great to have you with us. So we'll talk with these two guys about how to increase the resiliency of our electric grid and incorporating more renewable energy, and I hope you'll join in with your questions or comments as we move along today. You can reach us at 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, or you can email us at ideas@wpr.org. Again, love to hear from you. You know, you think about the electric grid, the U.S. electrical grid. We're not all connected, are we? I mean, when we call it a grid, what does that really mean? You can take that, Tom.
Sure. You know, the electric grid is an incredibly large and complex system. It's generally referred to and acknowledged to be the most complicated and largest machine defined broadly and that exists in the world. And it's true that not everybody in the United States is connected to the grid, but it does reach a very large percentage. It's particularly in places like Alaska, those areas that are far removed and still have, in many ways, still can be defined as frontier area, that where there are people who are living off grid. And there, in every state, there are individuals who choose to operate and live off grid. But it is quite important to recognize that really we are all linked together throughout the whole continental U.S. to the same electric grid, and it's really an incredible accomplishment of what it does in terms of, you know, we essentially tend to take it for granted because it's been there and so reliable for so long.
And so from our own homes and businesses, we just currently get it from off the main grid. Is that right?
Yes, that's right. Generally, the generating stations that are closest to us, those in Wisconsin here, will be the ones that supply us. But we import a significant amount of electricity, particularly renewable energy, from other states. And the nice, I mean, one of the wonderful things about the electricity, it doesn't know anything about state lines. It's happy to flow wherever the system directs it to, and that's obviously a very important feature when certain states run into specific problems and really need to have large imports, either because of very high load or loss of generation through either some natural or unnatural event that happens that takes power offline.
Aaron, I want to turn to you for a minute here, too. Your business, it's called Novomoto, Novomoto, Novomoto. It works on getting electricity to your home country of the Congo. And maybe first you could talk about how's our grid different here, different from other countries, perhaps like the Congo?
Sure. So the grid in Congo, unfortunately, is vastly different than what the United States and most developed countries have access to and have developed over the last number of decades and so forth. In Congo today, the country has access to about 1.5 gigawatts of electricity. That's about the same as Dane County. This is a country with a population of over 80 million people now, So on along the lines of Germany in terms of population, with an amount of electricity that leaves more than 90% of the population disconnected. So this means people have to find other ways to keep the lights on at home and to be able to run their businesses, whether small or large. Those that can afford it buy generators, pay for the fuel and the maintenance that goes along with that. Those that can't, and that's most people, end up relying on kerosene, kerosene lanterns, candles, or small flashlights that they can find in the market. These solutions are typically really expensive and cost an average Congolese family on the order of about $18 a month. So my co-founder, Dr. Madard Arjman, and I, back when we were both graduate students at the University of Wisconsin-Madison in the engineering mechanics program, got involved in entrepreneurship, actually through a class with Dan Olszewski over at the School of Business. And we were extremely motivated to be able to find an opportunity to have a solution to communities in Congo that were suffering through this issue that I just outlined. And what we found is that we could provide solar technology in a way that was affordable for many families and small businesses that would immediately provide them with a better experience. That is, more lighting, more access to phone charging, and an opportunity to move up the energy ladder and have more appliances and more access to energy as time goes on.
And to do it for a lot less money than it would take here, for example.
Well, yes. But I think one thing to keep in mind when saying that is also that the form of electricity and the things that our kits can provide to our customers is really different than what the U.S. grid provides. Yeah. We provide systems that are just 12-volt DC systems that power low-power LED lights, small televisions, and primarily phone charging. Fans can be added on as well and other DC loads. But this is not something that can power a manufacturing plant like the U.S. grid can or provide the type of energy that medium or larger businesses typically require here in the U.S. But it's a big step forward. And as our company grows, we hope to be able to find opportunities to provide electricity in ways that help spur on the economy as well.
Well, it does sound like a big leap forward. And I'm just wondering, how is the company doing? I mean, are you making inroads in the Congo?
Yeah, we are. So we had our first customer in Congo in 2017. By the end of 2017, we had set up about 20 pilot customers just outside of the capital city of Kinshasa. By the end of 2018, we had grown that to about 180 pilot systems installed. By the end of last year, we were just above 300, and now we're approaching 400. All still around Kinshasa. That's basically the base of our operations in the Congo. We have a particular focus in the western regions of Congo, around the capital. So that's the five provinces in that region there. And we're continuing to grow. So we have more systems that recently became available to us in Congo that we're continually marketing and installing for new customers. And we've recently raised some capital to be able to grow the company even further. So our goal for the end of 2020 or the early month of 2021 is to reach 5,000 customers in and outside of Kinshasa.
That's great. Tom, a comment on Aaron's work?
Well, I think it's just so important. It's really, I think that most of us would be amazed to know what a large number of people around the world still have access to no electricity. And as Aaron was saying, I mean, just the availability of a small amount of power, enough to turn on some lights and eliminate the need for burning kerosene, as well as to power, cell phones, which are critical for communications. I mean, it's a critically important area, and work that Aaron and other, important work that's going on around the world is really critical to addressing that need. One thing I will comment on, though, is that some of the work that we have going on related to microgrids at a large scale also has very important applications throughout the developing world as means of developing a small electric grid that's localized to a particular community that is separated from the rest of the grid. So there really are points of commonality, despite the differences that exist, as Aaron suggested, between the energy needs that take place in the developing world compared to what we think of as our needs here in the developed world.
Yeah, and you've been a guest on the show in the past, and you and I've talked. The microgrid itself, I think it's worth talking a bit more, and then we'll take some calls. We've got Erica and Tom on with some questions. But what about this microgrid? Explain. Give a kind of a brief explanation of it.
Sure, and I think the name microgrid really does encapsulate a lot of what this is about. The idea is that take an individual building, a building that might have PV on the rooftop, it might have batteries in the basement, it may have even small wind and fuel cells. Those are sources. Those are electrical sources that can supply the needs for occupants of that building. And one of the powerful concepts about a microgrid is that during normal conditions, it can be connected to the rest of the grid. In fact, if it has excess capacity, in other words, if there's more generation than what the occupants in the building need, it can actually, if there's no regulation that prevents it, it can actually export it and be paid for a price for the electricity exports. But what really makes the microgrid special is when something unusual comes about, whether it be a natural disaster, storms, or whether it could be cyber-related events, anything that might interrupt power from the grid. Microgrids are capable of then automatically and in almost a blink of an eye, disconnect from the grid and operate independently. So despite loss of power in the surrounding area, a building with a microgrid could continue to operate just as if nothing had changed. And that's obviously really important and very relevant to one of the themes of the show, which is resilience. That is the ability of an electric grid to continue operating in the presence of adversity. And microgrids is certainly not the full answer, but it is one of the major tools that's becoming increasingly available and increasingly important as we witness places like California ravaged by wildfires, or Superstorm Sandy a few years ago left a lot of people for extended periods of time without access to electricity. I mean, microgrids demonstrated in several cases their capability of doing just what I described, that is picking up the load locally and making it possible for certain buildings and certain operations to continue being essentially beacons of literally of light and heat in the presence of a lot of blackness because of those losses of other sources of the rest of the electric grid. So microgrids are certainly in a critical can play a critical role and are growing in popularity and use across the country and across the world.
Yeah. And Tom in Cedarburg has a question. I think it sounds like microgrids might be a partial answer to his question, but Tom, go ahead. Thank you for calling.
Hi, Larry. Great show as usual. Can you hear me all right?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Okay. I'm for, all this solar stuff and all this, but I think something that keeps getting missed, especially when you're talking about the electric grid, is I don't believe there's much, if any, protection against a nuclear pulse bomb. And if that were to happen, that would shut down the grid for maybe a year. And that would put the United States back in the Stone Age. And if people think things are bad now, it'd be unbelievable. And I was wondering, is there any plans in place to protect our grid so there'd be at least reliable power if that were to happen, like other countries are protecting their grids?
Mm-hmm. Tom Johns, you want to take a crack at that?
Sure. That is an extremely challenging issue, and there are those around the country and around the world, researchers who are trying to understand the extent of that problem and trying to appreciate what can be done in response to that sort of event. Given that the grid is as complicated as it is, it really is not an easy problem to, first of all, to understand, and second of all, to really come up with surefire solutions that will apply under all conditions, because it's something that we've never encountered or only encountered in very small cases where through solar flares or events that trigger this kind of response in the electric system can leave people without power. It does fall within the umbrella of resilience, and certainly I think microgrids are not nearly as vulnerable as the overall system might be. And so, again, there's no magic bullet for this. This is a huge issue, whether we are talking about solar flares or whether, heaven help us, we're talking about EMP coming from a nuclear holocaust, in which we have a whole lot of problems besides this.
Yeah.
But there are very serious issues that are associated with keeping the grid alive under such demanding conditions. And that's a work still in progress to really figure out how to handle that.
Tom from Cedarburg, thank you for calling. Appreciate it. Our guests today, Tom Johns, Granger Professor of Electrical and Computer Engineering at UW-Madison, Aaron Olson, PhD from UW-Madison Fusion Technology Institute, and he co-founded Novo Moto to help solve the extreme lack of electricity in his home county of the Congo and Sub-Sahara Africa. I'm Larry Mueller. Natalie Guyette, our producer today. Tyler Ditter, our engineer. You're listening to the Ideas Network. Taking a look at what's going on in the world of electricity today with our two guests, Tom Johns, Granger Professor of Electrical and Computer Engineering, Aaron Olson, who co-founded Novo Moto to help solve the extreme lack of electricity in his home country of the Congo and Sub-Saharan Africa. Great to have both of them with us today, and certainly you can join in with your own questions at 1-800-642-1234. Email us at ideas@wpr.org. Erica, thanks for waiting. What's on your mind?
I have two questions. One, is there a safe distance for housing beneath or near the huge transmission lines like ATC covers? I'm thinking off of I-94 and 18. There's a Poplar Creek. And then second question, would there be any value in getting a gas meter assessment of a house near there to see if that is of concern? And I'll take my answers off the air. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Tom, you want to take that one?
Well, thanks for the question. I have to say this particular issue is not one of my special expertise. But I will say that, at least to the extent that I'm aware, the studies that have been done regarding large transmission lines indicates that they're in relatively near proximity to those. The level of magnetic field strength, electrical strength are quite low. Fortunately, the field falls off very rapidly around those conductors, so that unless you're standing right under it, that generally there's no limited evidence that I'm aware of that this can cause serious medical problems. Certainly, for somebody who's particularly concerned about that, certainly there are ways to have studies done to try to provide quantitative information about that. But in general, living within sight of a transmission line in the vicinity is not known to pose any kind of serious health issue, although, again, I qualify that based on the fact that that's not my special area of expertise.
Mm-hmm. Erica, thanks very much. Did she have another question? I think we covered it. Thanks.
Yes, the Gauss meter testing.
As I commented, if somebody's in a situation and would like to have some of their fears allayed, certainly arranging for such a study is possible. I think unless, again, somebody is standing in very close proximity to the line, I think it will confirm that it's unlikely that the levels will be high enough to be known to cause any long-term health risks. But that's something that can be done and arranged for somebody who has a particular concern for their particular situation.
Yeah. Thanks, Eric. Appreciate it. Let's go to Glenn in Middleton next. Hi, Glenn. Thank you for calling.
Well, thanks for taking my call. It's a very interesting topic. I have two questions, actually. The first is regarding the model for this company of pay-as-you-go. I wonder how that works for a client there in the Democratic Republic of the Congo. How does pay-as-you-go work? And then the second question is related to the fact that the Democratic Republic of the Congo politically is a very unstable country with a lot of jeopardy for the individual people there, and I wonder how that affects trying to develop such a business.
Yeah. Aaron Olson, you've got a couple of good questions, I think, for you there.
Yeah, thank you for the questions. So to start with, the pay-as-you-go model that our company uses and a few other companies in sub-Saharan Africa are also using right now is basically a way of allowing customers to have access to financing for a solar kit. So the way it works is a customer can pay a small upfront fee. And in our case, our most recent pricing for our intro level system means that they pay $25 upfront. And then over a 6-month period of time, they have the opportunity to pay off the rest of the $100 sum. And they can do that in daily increments. So just as they potentially would have previously purchased kerosene or candles or batteries for a disposable flashlight, they can basically continue paying in small increments. And what happens when they do pay, and we use a platform called M-Pesa, by the way, for our payment, it goes directly through their phone. So something called USSD is what's used on their phones. It's similar to what you see when you put in a short code on your cell phone. So a menu pops up on the screen. They're able to enter characters that basically let us know what system they're paying for. And then they see how to pay directly to our company amidst the list of other providers that are operating in the Congo, like satellite TV providers and so forth. So when the payment comes through on our side, it reaches our server. We then scan that payment receipt, and then we send a text message back to their phone that has a code. That code they then can enter into their controller and battery box, which makes it so that they can use the energy stored in their battery for as long as they've paid for. So for an intro-level system, if they pay about 41 cents, that activates them for a day.
Wow.
And that process continues until they pay off the kit, and at that point we then aggressively market to them upgrade. And right now what we have is we have two different packages. We have a lighting package and we have a TV package. So for those that finish paying on the lighting package, we'd like them to step up to the TV package. And in the future, we'd like to have other upgrades as well that consist of just more energy or energy with appliances, which customers have a large interest in. Yeah, we've gotten a lot of feedback that customers would like to see options with refrigeration, whether it be just a small fridge or maybe a larger freezer that could be used for business purposes. There's some interest for fans as well. And as we continue to grow, we'll look at opportunities for more productive loads, things like irrigation or things like grain mills, things that people can use to basically create more economic opportunities for themselves.
That is that's really cool. And we're talking 100 or 125 bucks for this whole process to get started for people to put lights in their house.
$25 up front, and then the remaining $75 for that intro level kit can be paid off over a 6-month period. And we basically have it in a way where we can see what's going on with respect to the loans on all the customers that have our kits, and we have to actively manage those that are behind on payments, and everybody basically is given a security deposit. So people have the opportunity to basically fall back on payments for a short period of time and then can catch up again before they get their systems repositioned.
And we're talking
second.
Yeah, go ahead. I'm sorry.
Wanted to touch on the second question.
Yeah.
But sorry, go ahead.
I was just going to add here the income level at, you know, it doesn't sound like a lot of money to us, but the income level there in the Congo is considerably less than here.
Yes, unfortunately, that is the case. GDP per capita at this point is around $400 to $500.
Yeah,
but the estimates are not great. There's a huge informal economy that exists in Congo, so it's hard to really nail down what people are actually making. But it is certainly less than what we have here in the U.S. That's for certain.
And then back to the question about the stability or perhaps the instability of the political situation, so forth in the Congo.
So historically speaking, Congo became an independent country in 1960. And there was a first prime minister, Patrice Lumumba, who was in power for about a year or so. And unfortunately, there was a change of power and a dictator basically took control of the country shortly thereafter, and then formalized his dictatorship in 1965 and then eventually changed the name of the country to Zaire, if you remember when Congo was Zaire, from 71 up until 1997 when he was finally removed from power. At that point, the Kabilas came into power, first Laurent Kabila, and then his son in 2001, Joseph Kabila. So fortunately, though, at the end of 2018, there was an election to choose the new president after Kabila eventually ceded power. And now Felix Tshisekedi is now the president in an election that didn't have wasn't without its flaws and some of its issues. But at the end of the day, it was a peaceful transition of power. So where the country is headed from the perspective of governance and transparency and freedom for the people is actually headed in a pretty good direction.
Yeah.
Unlike some other places in the world, Congo has free access to information. For the most part, there are some rare occasions where the internet or the cell phone services are cut off, but the internet is open to everybody. People can call anywhere in the world they want. Businesses are free to come into the country and set up their operations, whether they be from any place in the world. And more now, especially with the new government, there are more opportunities being offered for companies like Novomoto and others that have bases in other parts of the world to come in and basically set up operations and get some subsidies even from the government to help with that. So we actually recently benefited from an exoneration from the government that will help us for the next 3 years not have to pay as much customs. So when we first started, we were paying about 60% of the cost of our goods and the shipping of our goods to get equipment into the country. And now, due to this exoneration, we now are getting a big reduction to that. And on top of that, there are some signs that the government wants to step up and provide opportunities for companies specifically interested in providing electricity solutions, offering them some additional support outside of just the exoneration support or the customs support. So I think everything in general is headed in the right direction. That doesn't mean that there aren't issues as they are, but we as a company feel pretty good with where the country's headed.
Yeah, excellent. Let's take another call. Karen, by the way, Glenn, thank you for that question. Karen and Madison, your turn now. Hi, Karen.
Good morning. Thank you for having this really important program. And I wanted some information. My understanding of the grid is, yes, it's vast and connected, but it also there's a lot of loss of electricity as the energy is moving through the grid because it is so vast and big. Also, if it goes down, the whole thing can be affected, you know, like with the fires in California. And that it's kind of antiquated, actually, to have such a large and vast grid. And I'm remembering my father was born in 1919. He was a builder, and he was hoping for the day that he could have wind power and sell back his electricity to the to the the electric companies. And and then my other point is, but he said that, you know, they would fight that, and now the farmers can sell their power back. But anyway, you know, we can't as small homeowners. And the other thing is that maybe somewhere between the way the Americans live and the way the people in the Congo live, probably more towards their standard of living in some ways, that's what we should be doing, because we waste so much electricity. That's my opinion. In this country, there's enough for human need but not greed. And this present moment that we're going through is really showing us what's really important, and it's not profit at all cost. It's, it's the environment and all those things. So but I guess the big question is about the loss of electricity on the grid.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Karen, thank you for calling. Tom Johns, turn to you.
Well, thanks so much for the question. It raises some really important issues, and maybe I can provide a little bit of clarification. You're very correct in about the issue of losses in terms of the amount of the inefficiency of electrical power generation. But it turns out, interestingly enough, it's not the losses in the transmission lines. I mean, where the real inefficiency is right in the generation of the electricity. It turns out that on average, only one-third of all of the energy that goes into producing electricity actually ends up as electricity. The other two-thirds ends up as heat that gets thrown generally into the air or into the lakes, whether it be Lake Mendota here in Madison, or Lake Michigan, or oceans, or whatever. And that really comes down to the fact that so much of our electricity in the United States still comes from fossil fuels. And unfortunately, burning fossil fuels, even with the advanced technology, it's hard to get much approach or exceed 50%. And a lot of it is noticeably less than that. So when everything is said and done, it's only about one-third of all of the energy that goes into producing electricity that actually comes out the other end as electricity. And so, I mean, as engineers, someone like me, you look at it and say, gosh, there's got to be ways to do better than that. And the good news is that there are. And the anecdote you described about, you know, looking from back in the 1920s, looking ahead to the days when electricity could be sold back to the grid. I mean, that was really a foresight far ahead of his time because it is only today that kind of model is even starting to come into play. And it's and just as he said, I mean, it is being fought in many parts of the country, and it's the fight has a lot to do with the regulations that regulate who gets to generate and put power onto the line and who deserves to get paid for it. There are parts of the country where the rules have been changed in such a way that it's becoming much easier for homeowners to be able to generate their own electricity and actually be able to sell it back to the utility and be paid for it. But there are other parts of the country, including here in Wisconsin, where, just as Karen described, that here in our state, homeowners are not given that same privilege. So it really is all done state by state, and the states are at very different places in terms of where they are, in terms of allowing homeowners or small businesses to be able to do that. So in some ways, we've come a long way. I mean, our electric grid is incredible in terms of its reliability and performance. So I don't want to leave the impression with anybody that it's a piece of old technology, but the basic concepts that go into it and the basic configuration really does trace back about 100 years in terms of the way that our electricity is generated by large power plants and then distributed out to users across the countryside. We're moving slowly in the direction of having a more distributed system in which those big power plants are getting broken up into very small pieces, PV on one's rooftop, or small generators in one's basement, or wind power. It's a slow change, but that is clearly the direction that we're moving in the direction of, to take what has been a very centralized generation and moving towards a more distributed form of generation, which has the opportunity to be much, much more highly efficient, getting back to your original question.
Yeah. Thanks for that question, Karen. Dave in Neillsville, what's on your mind?
Well, I just wanted to make the comment that I have lived with a microgrid on my cabin for the last 3 years. So I'm sold on it. After the tough winter of 2019, I decided to move out of my cabin into a house, and I am currently converting it to renewables. I'm doing this on myself because it's something I like to do, but I just want to make a point that solar and renewables are awesome.
Yeah. Dave, thank you very much for calling. I don't think you're going to get much argument from Tom and Aaron.
No, I'm smiling here. I mean, that's great. We need pioneers out there who are willing to, you know, to make the investment and accept the fact that, you know, any new technology, there's bound to be glitches. But, boy, when it works, it really can make a believer. I mean, all it takes is one bad storm. And the fact that you're cozy, still warm, and able to continue operation in your building, whether it be a commercial building or a home, whereas the rest of the community around you is not. I mean, that's a powerful concept that makes believers out of people who are able to take advantage of this kind of technology.
Yeah, and I bet most of us at one time or another have been without electricity, even for a few hours. Sometimes it feels like, oh my goodness, when is this going to end?
I have to say, in this part of the world, we're quite spoiled. I mean, if power goes out for more than a few minutes, we're very indignant. How could this happen? But in other parts of the world, developing parts of the world, including major countries like India, you know, it's a few hours per day, if they're fortunate, when the electricity is actually working. So, I mean, we have an incredible system, but it is subject to a variety of issues, both in terms of its resilience and, you know, things like Superstorm Sandy and all the wildfires out on the West have demonstrated that, yes, it's a wonderful system, but it is fragile. And as a result, there's a lot of people who suffer who, through no fault of their own, find themselves in those parts of the world where those kinds of disasters end up knocking out their electricity for, you know, for days at a time. Or actually, the electricity can be turned off as a precautionary measure in order to try to ensure that the electric grid does not instigate or trigger any new fires in under very dry conditions. So there's certainly a lot of opportunity for microgrids and renewable energy to play a critical role in helping to address those kinds of needs in the future.
Well, guys, I want to thank you both very much. Aaron Olson, your business, do you have an online presence?
Yes. In fact, for all the listeners out there, please go to www.novomoto.net. That's novomoto.net to learn more about what we're doing and to also follow us on social media. We are on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and LinkedIn as well. So please connect with us and we'd love to get you on our newsletter list as well to keep you posted on where we're headed.
Well, Aaron, thank you so much. And Tom John, it's always a pleasure to have you with us. I hope we can do this again. Thank you both very much for being with us today.
Well, thank you very much for the invitation. It's been my pleasure.
Yeah. Tom Johns and Aaron Olson. Tom Johns, a Granger Professor of Electrical and Computer Engineering. We'll get them back. Aaron Olson, the other, is co-founder of Novomoto to help solve the extreme lack of electricity in his home country of the Congo and sub-Saharan Africa. Great to have both of them with us today. We're going to turn our attention to climate and weather next. It's got to be the last Monday of the month because the weather guys, they always come with us on the last Monday of the month, and they're up next. I'm Larry Mueller for the Ideas Network.